And we're holding on one with Vav Amud Aleph at the top. We learned in the Mishnah that on Yom Tov, but not on Shabbos, we said, if you have fruit drying on your roof, and you see that rain is, you see that it's going to be raining soon, and you don't want it to get ruined, then you're allowed to throw it down. Mashilin, or we had five different versions of what the word is, whatever, you're allowed to throw down the fruit through a skylight in the roof on Yom Tov to save it, but not on Shabbos. So we were asking, how much could you do? We tried to compare it with a case in Masechta Shabbos where you're allowed to move up to four or five boxes worth of produce or of straw to make room for guests or Beis Medrash. So we said the same thing over here. Maybe you should be limited to four or five. Maybe the rule would be you could do four or five boxes, but the Gemara tried out various alternatives, not necessarily. Maybe on the one hand, Yom Tov should be more stringent than Shabbos, since you don't want people to be careless with Yom Tov. Maybe on the other hand, over there you don't have any hefsid. Here you have a hefsid. Here you have a potential loss of money, so maybe you should be allowed more. So now the Gemara is going to continue on that theme with another detail that we have of the din over there. Does it apply over here as well? So Hosam Tznan, we learn in the Mishnah there in Shabbos, Ava Loya Sa'oitzer, we learn there that we said you're allowed to clear away, you're allowed to move four or five boxes of straw or produce or whatever in order to make room for Ochim or Beis Medrash. But we said Ava Loya Sa'oitzer, but not the storehouse. And what does that mean? What it means is that even we're allowing you to move four or five boxes. By the way, the Gemara asks, what do you mean four or five? Is it four or is it five? And the Gemara says it means it depends on the size of the storehouse, based on what Shmuel is saying over here, that lo yigmar sa'otzer kula. You're not allowed to completely empty out the otzer and completely uncover the floor. Because he might come to smooth out holes and things in the floor. He may notice after he clears out everything that, you know what, there are holes in the floor. The place is not level, and then he's going to go and fill in those holes and smooth them out, and thereby he's going to be over on the issue of Boina. So the four or five means four if it's a smaller oitzer and five if it's a larger oitzer. Whatever. So there we're saying that you're not allowed to clear out everything. You have to leave something still there in order that it'll remind you not to smooth out the floor. Well, the question is, hachamai, what would be the din over here when we're talking about the fruit on the roof? Do you have the same kind of restriction? Do you have the same kind of restriction that you can clear off most of the fruit, but not all of it? On the one hand, we can say Hosam hu b'Shabbos de Oser Mishum de Chomer. We can argue that there on Shabbos it should be also to clear out the whole thing, Mishum de Chomer, because after all, Shabbos is more stringent, much more is Oser on Shabbos than Yom Tov. Avo Yom Tov to kill Shapur Dami, but Yom Tov is more lenient, so maybe it would be fine even to clear all of it. We're talking about clearing off the fruit from the roof. That was the subject of our Mishnah, but we're also comparing it with a Mishnah in Shabbos about clearing out boxes of fruit because of Orchim and Beis HaMedrash. You have to dry over there. So, O Dilma Hossam, the Ikabit of Beis HaMedrash, Amar Taloi, or maybe you could argue on the contrary. There you're saying even those Bittul Beis HaMedrash, if you don't clear out the space, people are not going to have where to learn. And Amar Taloi, and you're still saying that no, there's a limit how much you can move. Hacha, the Lekka Bittul Beis HaMedrash, like Koshikin, how much more so here, there's no Bittul Beis HaMedrash. So that's another question we have. We notice, by the way, as we go through this, that the Gemara's assumptions keep on shifting. For example, the first time around, we argued that maybe we should be more machmir on Yom Tov rather than Shabbos because we don't want people to be careless with it. Here we're arguing on the contrary, Shabbos should be more osir than Yom Tov. So the Pnei Yeshua says just these are different amiroyim, came up with these arguments. So each one came up with whatever he felt was most logical to him. The Shittur Mekubetzes, on the other hand, has a very long explanation, where he goes through systematically these questions and answers and shows how in each one only two possibilities that the Gemara is bringing forth are the ones that would be valid in that context. For example, in the first part, we were just talking about how many you can move. The matter, it's a matter of tircha. Here you're talking about already a matter of potential malacha. So in each case, then it brings up the things that are appropriate to that case. And a third case, a third question. So far we have two open questions. Number one, what's the maximum amount that you can move? Number two, are you allowed to clear off the entire roof, unlike there where you're not allowed to clear out the entire oitzer, or is it different in our case? Another question, v'hochatnan, here in our Mishnah we say, mashilin peiros derech aruba b'yamdiv, you're allowed to throw down the fruit through the skylight on yamdiv, v'amar Rav Nachman l'shonu ala b'oisei agag. Now Rav Nachman tells us that applies only if it's on the same roof. If you have the skylight is in the same roof where the fruit is, then you can throw it down through there. But to go from one roof to the other, that the Mishnah is not going to allow you, because that tircha yisera. V'tanya nami hachi, and we learn similarly in the Braisa. Ein metalton and migag legag. You're not allowed to move the fruit from one roof to another. Afilu b'shagagis sehen shavim. Even if the roofs are both on the same level, so there's no. It's not like you have to pick it up, but you just have to move it across. But still, because it's on another roof, then the chachamim aren't going to allow you. So now we can ask the other way. Hosamai. So now, would a similar din apply in that case in Masechta Shabbos involving the moving of the boxes? So let's say, for example, you're moving them from one storage area to a different one. Let's say, would we say Kol Shekin Shabbos to Chamira? Would we say, well, if you can't do it on Yom Tov, all the more so on Shabbos, because Shabbos is more stringent. This is in parenthesis because Marshall takes this out. Or maybe Hochor de Osir, Mishim de Yumtiv de Kill. Again, maybe we have more reason to Asir it in this case because Yumtiv is usually more lenient. But Osir is Alzuli Bey. So you might come to be careless altogether with Yumtiv, thinking that given that I'm allowed to do so many Malachas on Yumtiv, and if you allow him to do this also, he may get careless and start doing more things on Yumtiv that he's not allowed to. Again, we had yesterday Marsha's Svara that when it comes to an actual Malacha, we're, of course, going to say that Yom Tov is more lenient than Shabbos, but here we're not dealing with an actual malacha. Here we're just dealing with Tircha Yisera, so maybe we have more reason to be machmer on Yom Tov. Abel Shabbos to Chamira v'lo Osir Zalzuli b'al Shapur Dami, but Shabbos is anyway more stringent. Nobody's going to get that careless with Shabbos. Therefore, it would be fine to move them, let's say, from one storehouse or from one roof to another. So on the one hand, maybe Shabbos is more stringent. Maybe on the other hand, we should argue Yom Tov is more stringent. Oy Dilma, or maybe we have another point to consider. Ma hocha de'ikya hefsed peiros. Madach over here, where you have a potential loss of the fruit. It's going to get ruined by the rain. Amaut aloy, and still you're saying there are restrictions and you can't move it from one roof to another. Hosam the leka hefsed peiros. Over there, there's no potential loss. You want urchim, you want bitul, you want a base medrash, but you know there's no actual hefsed involved. So loy kolshkin. So maybe how much more so then that it shouldn't be allowed to do that on Shabbos if you can't do it on Yom Tov. And a fourth question, Hocha Tnan, or Tanya really, because it's a Braisa, in our connection of our fruit that we're talking about in our Mishnah, the Braisa says, when we say that you're allowed to lower them through the skylight, fine, you're allowed to drop them down or throw them down or lower them down through the skylight, but lo yishalshalem b'chevel b'chaloinus, you're not allowed to lower them using a rope from through the windows. So we had in the Mishnah, Rashi described that, let's say, so the roof doesn't have a skylight in it. It has a fence around it, a wall around it. In that mechitza, in that wall around the roof, there is a window that overlooks the chotzer, or that overlooks the house. So we're saying you're not allowed to pick up the fruit and put it out through the window and lower ropes that way, because that you already have the tircha to pick it up from the roof to go to the window and then from there to lower it to the ground. So that would again be tircha yisera. V'lo yeridim derech sulamos. Similarly, you're not allowed to bring them down from the roof by way of ladders. Or Rashi says it doesn't just mean ladders, it can also mean steps or ramps or whatever, anything that you walk up to get, anything that you walk up and down to get between the roof and the ground. So again, you're only allowed to throw it down or lower it down through the skylight, but not to carry it down by way of sulamos, by way of stairs or ladders, or put it out or lower it down through the window, because then you have to lift it up to the window. So again, the question is, Hosamai, what would be the din in that case in the Masechta Shabbos when we're saying that you're allowed to move boxes of produce because of to make room for Orchim or the Beis Medrash? Again, you have the same kinds of questions. Here, maybe you would say it's also on Yom Tov. You know why? Because there's no Bittul Beis Medrash. There's no overarching good reason of that you want to have room for people to learn Torah. Therefore, we want you to do as little tircha as possible. It's only a matter of hefsid. Aval Shabbos, the ikka Bittul Beis Medrash. But on Shabbos, when you do have Bittul Beis Medrash, shaper jami, maybe it would be fine to even move it by picking it up and putting it to the window and bringing it down to the chotzer, or bringing it down the sulam that way. Or maybe the other way around. Maybe hefsid peiris itself is a very important factor. And here we're still saying, even with the result of the potential hefsid, we're not allowing it. Hosim deleka hefsid peiris lekolshikin. How much more so there where there's no hefsid involved? So the answer to all these questions is teiku. And because we're dealing over here ultimately only with Xeda Dirabanan, therefore the poskim say the result of the teiku is that the answer to all of these will be you will be allowed to do it. So there will be the restriction that we set in the middle over here, that you can't on Yom Tov move the fruit from one roof to another, and that you can't take them down by way of the windows or the ladders or whatever, but that you are allowed to clear more than four or five boxes worth, unlike on Shabbos, and that you are allowed to even take everything and make and completely empty the roof, again, unlike Shabbos, because we left it in Teiku. Okay.
Rab Shimon is makil to bring Mashir Mitzvah from Gag to Gag on Shabbos. And here we're saying teiku about something that's on Yom Tov. And how do you explain that?
First of all, there it's for a mitzvah, here it's not. And first of all, there it's for a mitzvah, here it's not. But second of all, just the opposite. We said maybe there's more reason to allow such things on Shabbos rather than on Yom Tov, because we don't want people to get careless on Yom Tov. It is true. It's not just a matter of machshirei mitzvah. The halacha is actually anything that we learned this in Eruvin. Anything that was on the roof before Shabbos, you're allowed to move it to another roof on Shabbos. Kol gag seir reshusach, as we said, all the roofs and chatzeres and whatnot are considered one reshus. However, over here, when we're talking about moving the fruit in order to save it from the rain, then that's different, and you can't do that. You can't move it from one. Remember, we're talking on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, you're allowed to carry anyway, but there's still the matter of tircha yisera. To bring one thing, to bring a mila knife or a towel or what have you, from one gag to another is not a tircha yisera, but here we're talking about moving a considerable amount of fruit, so therefore that would be tircha yisera, and we're not going to allow you to do it on Yom Tov. And even the teiku doesn't really change that, because we said that in the middle as a fact, ein metalkin the gag lagag, period. We were only asking, does that also apply on Shabbos when it comes to mefanin, when it comes to clearing away those four or five boxes worth of produce to make room for Orchim or the Beis Medrash? Would the same rule apply on Shabbos? So fine, the teiku might say we'd allow it on Shabbos, because again, it's only a gzeira d'rabbanan. So therefore you could move, and given that the halacha is, like you said, that you're allowed to move things from one roof to another on Shabbos, so therefore maybe we'd be allowed to in this case also, fine. But on Yom Tov itself, we're clearly saying you're not allowed to, because this would be one of those examples where we treat Yom Tov more stringently, because as the Gemara was saying over here, we don't want people to get careless with Yom Tov altogether.
So what is it? It's Tircha Yisera, or it's a Zilzul Yom Tov?
Same thing. I mean, Tircha Yisera is a Zilzul Yom Tov.
If it's
all right,
no, because if it's a Tircha Yisera, that would imply that if there's less food to transport, then it would be allowed.
Maybe. I mean, on the other hand, first of all, when a person has fruit drying on their roof, it's not usually just, you know, a couple of pieces. It's a fair size amount. But besides which, once we say that, we might say loy plug, that the Chachamim don't start making distinctions between a little or a lot, because then where are you going to draw the line? by the Mishnah. Again, we started out the sugya over here yesterday talking about that on Shabbos you're limited to four or five boxes, and he was asking on Yom Tov, is there the same limitation? We're saying in the end, again, the teiku includes that you're allowed to do more than that on Yom Tov, but again, only when you're throwing it down through the one skylight, not when you're taking it from one roof to another. So that's the thing. What the Gemara has been discussing over here is where exactly we draw the line between, on the one hand, we want the person to be able to save his fruit and not get it ruined. On the other hand, we don't want it to do Tuchi Yaseira, which is a zilzil in Yom Tov. All right, so let's go on. So we said, by the way, this that we're talking about Hefzid, I mean, it's worth maybe talking about a little bit. In a few lines, the Gemara is going to tell us about that there's a difference between Hefzid Merubah and Hefzid Mu'at. You actually have, in Halacha, we often have that Hefzid Merubah is a factor in considering whether something is Mutter or not. Many times we'll find in Shulchan Aruch something that such and such is Osir, but the Hefzid Merubah you can be Maker. So Chasam Amon Yisrael Yisrael is one part of it. So actually, the Ramah wrote a sefer called Todas Chatas, where he deals with this, and where he says a lot of times in this sefer he explains that you have such and such is where he says just that such and such is also, but perhaps in Meruba you can be Makel. And he explains because the idea is obviously you can't Hefs in Meruba is not going to allow you to be over on Daraisis or Darabanan. But he says a lot of times what you find is the reason why we're saying to be machmir on such and such is, for example, because you have a rishon who hold that way, or you have some rishonim who hold that way. But perhaps in Merubah, we're saying, after all, even those rishonim themselves were maybe only saying it as a chumrah, not me'ikir adin. So therefore, when it's not ikir adin, and you have hefs in Merubah involved, then you can be make on it. In fact, there was an older brother of the Maharal named Reb Chaim, who was a great Talmud Chacham in his own right. He wrote a sefer called Vikuach Mayim Chaim to argue very strongly with the Ramah and say, what are you talking about? Hefs and Merubah is going to allow you to do things that otherwise you wouldn't. And then he goes systematically through and argues against everything that the Ramah writes on that about being Mekel on Hefs and Merubah. Lamaisa, we have many times, sometimes there are times when we say Hefs and Merubah, sorry, you know, you gotta just deal with it. You know, they but there are times when Hefs and Merubah actually does make a difference, and you do say that is a factor in saying that therefore certain chumra maybe wouldn't apply. There is also in that regard a very interesting story that happened in the time of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. He writes about it in one of his Trubas. There was a bacher in a certain city who local goyim owed him a lot of money, and he's concerned. He didn't have a guarantor. How's he going to get his money back? So one time on Shabbos, he goes to the local place where they gather, the local marketplace or whatever, and he starts talking with them about it, and finally manages to arrange for a guarantor. And when he got back to town, everybody, all the Jews, were very angry at him that they said, you know, first of all, I mean, that you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos, you're not allowed to talk business on Shabbos, and they said you're making things worse for us. Now the goyim are going to think we don't have to keep Shabbos. So therefore, they're going to use that as a basis for saying, for example, let's say until now, they knew if a Jew is going to be called to a Goyish court and the court date is on Shabbos, till now they knew, look, Jews don't work on Shabbos. We can't force him to come on Shabbos. We'll have him come during the week. Now they're going to use what you did as an excuse to say, look, you know, you see that Jews are allowed to do business on Shabbos. So you're ruining things for all of us. So the case came to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and he writes a long tshuva about it. And he ends up justifying what this bacher did partly on the basis of hefzid merubah, that you can't expect him to have to deal with such a large hefzid. As far as the potential problem with the he says, after all, it's not like the bacher himself was justifying himself. I didn't actually do any business. I didn't write anything. I didn't do any malacha or anything. All I did was ask around among the goyim who I can get for a guarantor. That's at most dibur, that's not an actual malacha. And Rabbi Yaakov wrote that, you know what, the bacher has a point as far as the fact that it might cause trouble for the Jews later on. He brings, based on a Gemara and Avodah Zarah, that's not a factor, and the bacher is not obligated to consider that. So we see those are examples where hefzid merubah makes a real difference in halacha. Okay, continues the Gemara. The Mishnah had said you're allowed to cover fruit where you have, you're allowed to cover fruit with kalim, where there's a leak in the roof, and again, so now the peiros are inside the house, but there's a leak, and you're afraid the peiros are going to get ruined. Omar Ula, so Ula says, it's not only fruit, va'afiru avira delivery. Even if you have a row of bricks that are set up, you're going to use those bricks for building, so they're mukta, but now rain is dripping on them and you're afraid the bricks in those times were made out of clay and they could fall apart in the rain. So you're allowed to take cloths or whatever and cover them. We don't say since the bricks are mukta, then you're not allowed to pick up a cloth and use it to cover them. Rabbi Yitzchak, I'm a peiros ha'ra'uyin. On the other hand, Rabbi Yitzchak says that no, not only you couldn't do that with bricks, but even as far as the peiros, they have to be roy, they have to be ones that you could actually move on Yom Tov. Namely, that the peiros themselves are not mukta. So Rabbi Yitzchak is going according to his own svara. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, as we learned before, Rabbi Yitzchak said, "En kli nito elo ledavra nito b'Shabbos." A keli can be picked up on Shabbos only on behalf of something else that can also be moved on Shabbos. So we had at the beginning of the Masechta, for example, Rabbi Yitzchak had said an egg that was laid on Shabbos or Yom Tov, where we learned that it was mukta. Then you can't, Rabbi Yitzchak had said, you can't pick up a bowl on Shabbos or Yom Tov to cover the egg, because that would be picking up the bowl, which itself is not mukta, for the sake of something else that is. By the same token, Rabbi Yitzchak is going to say here, if the fruit is mukta, then you can't pick up a keli to cover it. And the same thing with bricks. So, the Gemara said, Tanan, let's look at our Mishnah and see which opinion it fits better. We said machasin as a peiros for kalim. We said you're allowed to cover peiros with kalim, with clothes, implying peiros ain avira delivni loy, implying only peiros. Otherwise, bricks is a greater chiddush. The Mishnah could have said machasin as a labanim the kalim. The fact that it doesn't do that seems to show not like Ola. It seems to show more like Rabbi Yitzchak. The answer is no. Who loy? Who had din da'afilo avira delivni? No, you could argue that the Mishnah means that it would be allowed even with avira delivni, even with a row of bricks. Ma'aydin, tana resha, mashilin peiros, tana sefer nami, mechasen as a peiros. You could say just because it continues as peiros, because it started the Mishnah that way. It started mashilin peiros, where obviously there we're talking about peiros because you don't put bricks out on your roof to dry, so therefore it continues as peiros, even though maybe the din of mechasen would apply to bricks as well. Okay, Tanan, we learn the Mishnah continues. We said the same thing applies to jars of wine or oil. Now, those are not something that the Mishnah described before. So obviously, therefore, we see that the Mishnah is mentioning other things besides peiros. So then why is it mentioning jars of wine and oil? It should have mentioned, according to Ula, it should have mentioned bricks, which is a bigger chizush. And the answer is, the answer is you should know that the Mishnah, when it describes jars of wine and oil, it is in fact talking about something similar to bricks, because the jars of wine, what is that adding to? What is that a greater chiddush than fruit? Because it's talking about where the wine or the oil is tevel. In other words, if we'd only mentioned fruit, you would think we're talking about the kind of fruit which is not mukta. So now, by adding jars of wine and oil, we're meant to understand that it means also ones that are tevel. Now, tevel was mukta. So therefore, that you are allowed to cover them to prevent them from getting wound. Actually, the Teferis Yisrael points out also why mention both wine and oil. He says because oil is an even bigger chiddush. If water falls into oil, we know oil and water don't mix. So you'll easily be able to skim it off after Yom Tov. Nevertheless, still you're allowed to cover it. But here we're talking about where it's tevel, and nevertheless, the Mishnah is saying that you're allowed to cover it. So Tosfos adds that Ula would say, okay, listen, it's true we learned at the end of the previous perek that the Dievet, that the Dievet, if you did take Truma and Maisa from it on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, it would be valid and it wouldn't be Mukta anymore. Nevertheless, Ula would say that the fact is, it's still considered, the fact is, as long as you don't do that, it's still also to move it on Shabbos. In fact, the case that we just mentioned from Shabbos about Mefan and Abba v'chomish kuppos, where you're allowed to move away boxes of produce, the Mishnah specifically says there that you can't move them if they're tevel. So even though it, conceivably a person could violate Shabbos and take Truma and Maisa from them, and if he did, then it would work with Yevid. Nevertheless, we're not allowing him to move that Tevel HaTchila. So Ula would argue the same thing is true here as far as these jugs of wine and oil. Anyway, So we're talking about Tevel. So yeah, so in that case, Tevel is functionally the same as the bricks that Ullah is talking about. And the Gemara says, Hochinami Mistabra. In fact, it seems logical to understand the Mishnah that way. The Isak would have Kada Yain Makada Shemin de Hatera. If the Mishnah had mentioned, if the Mishnah was just talking about regular jars of wine and oil that are mutter to use, that are masukan with truma and meiser has been taken out, why even mention it at all? Hatanale Reisha Peiros. We already mentioned Peiros. Obviously, the Mishnah is not, as the Gemara sometimes uses the expression, the Tana is not going to start listing everything like a peddler who lists everything that he has for sale. Obviously, it's only going to list things that there's a chiddush. So therefore, we must say that the Kade Yain, the Kade Shemen, have a chiddush over the Peiros. Namely, the Peiros are the kind we were talking about in the Reisha of the Mishnah, where they're not mukta because they're ready to eat. And the ones in the Sefer, on the other hand, the Sefer, the jars of wine and oil, are talking about where they're not ready to eat because they're Tevel. So that shows that. And in fact, that would show the Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yitzchak then. The Gemara says not necessarily. No, maybe you could say there's a certain chiddush in mentioning jars of wine and oil independent of, even if we say that this wine or oil already had truma and meiser taken. Because otherwise you might have thought, maybe the Chachamim were only concerned about Hefsid Merubah, where you have if the leek drips on the fruit, then it's going to ruin them completely. But maybe the Hefsid Muat like Chashashu, maybe the Chachamim were not concerned and they're not going to allow you to do it only for a Hefsid Muat, where you have a little rain falling on the wine, it's only a Hefsid Muat, because you just have to wait till after Yom Tov is over, and then you can strain it out or skim it off or whatever. So therefore, Kamash Malan. Therefore, the Mishnah mentions Kadeh Yain, the Kadeh Shemen, to tell us not so. Even by a Hefsid Muat is a valid reason to cover them on Shabbos. But still, according to Rabbi Yitzchok, we could say that we're talking about jars of wine and oil that are not, in fact, Muktzah. Truma and Maaser has already been taken, whereas according to Ullah, they would mean ones that have not had Truma and Maaser taken, and therefore similar to bricks. By the way, as far as this Hefsid Muat and Hefsid Merubah idea, Rabbi Akiva Eger brings in one of his Truvas an interesting idea. He says, what if you have, for example, he mentioned the case over there involving a bunch of individual dishes, where you have, there's going to be, in the aggregate, you're going to have the Hefsid Merubah. If you have, let's say you have a suffix by a bunch of them, whether they became treif or something, where each one of them is only a Hefsid Muat, only in the aggregate are a Hefsid Merubah. Rabbi Akiva Eger says, that's not considered a Hefsid Merubah. You have to look at them individually. So Rav Moshe talks about this in one of his Chuvas. He says, what about the Peiros over here? You could say each Peiros is also a Hefsid Muat. And the answer is it's different when you have a whole pile of Peiros, then the whole pile effectively is considered one unit, as opposed to over there where each Keli stands by itself. Okay. Tznan. Yeah, Tznan. Let's continue looking at the Mishnah. And let's see whether our Mishnah fits better according to Ullah, who says that you can do it even when the object itself is mukta, or like Rabbi Yitzchak, who says only if it's not mukta. The Mishnah continued, Noisnin kli tachas adelach b'Shabbos, you're allowed to put a keli under a leak on Shabbos to catch the water. Now, on the face of it, water that's leaking through the ceiling is not usable for anything, it's dirty water, and yet we're allowing you to put a keli over there, so that would show like Ullah, not like Rabbi Yitzchak, because according to Rabbi Yitzchak, you'd only be allowed to do it if the water is roy. And the answer is, maybe you're talking about delaf haroy, we may well be talking about where the delaf is clear water, where the water that's leaking in is clear water, and you could at least give it to an animal to drink. There is, in fact, a machlokes rishonim, whether that answer of the Gemara ends up being valid lahalacha. You have the hay in it from Ein Mishpat Mer Mitzvah, showing that it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. That's the opinion of the Rambam, who says that it only works by Delaf Haroi. On the other hand, you have the Tur, says that no, even if it's Delaf Shein Haroi, the Gemara is saying only in order to end for the Mishnah, according to the Yitzchak. Doesn't mean that it must be that way. In fact, the Mishnah Berurah points out an interesting side thing. He says, how is it that you're allowed to wash Negovasu into a basin in the morning on Shabbos or Yom Tov? Isn't that water not, or for that matter, Mayim Achronim? That water is not roi afterwards because you're not supposed to use it. You're supposed to spill it out. We're going to talk about later on a graf shori'i, something that's repulsive and you don't want it around. Fine, but we're also going to say you can't make graf shori'i l'chatchila. So he says, first of all, maybe we're holding like the tour in that and allowing it. Second of all, he says, maybe that's different, the water from Negovas or the water from Mayim Acharonim, it's not that it's intrinsically unused, it's not that it's unusable as in because of dirt or whatever. It's unusable because of Ruach Ra. Fine, that's not a reason enough to call it Einar Roy. It's not that there's anything physically preventing it from being used. So therefore, that would be a reason to allow it. Okay. Tashma, let's bring another proof. A Braisa says, person Machselas Agabi Levenim B'Shabbos, it says you're allowed to spread out a mat over bricks on Shabbos. It preposterous to protect them from the rain. So that's clearly not like Rabbi Yitzchak. The answer is no. You could say, you could say we're talking about bricks that were left over after the building was finished. So now you're not planning to use them for a building anymore, as we learned in the previous parak. The chazil, the mizgalayu, at that point, they're more suitable for leaning or sitting or whatever on. And you know, you're not usually going to use them for another building project. So we said in the previous parak that if you set them out, if you laid them out in a way that showed that you plan to still use them, then fine, then they would be muktzah again, but otherwise not. Toshma, we learn in another braisa, person machzelas agabi avonim b'Shabbos. You're allowed to spread out a mat over rocks on Shabbos. Rocks are muktzah. The answer is, Rabbi Yitzchok would answer, but avonim mekuzolos, we're talking about avonim mekuzolos, where we've talked about before that Rashi learns that it means that they had that Rashi learns that it means that they're sort of sharp, and Tosfos in various places learns that it means that they're a little bit soft. Whatever it is, the chazim, the besakise, they are suitable to use to wipe yourself after you go to the bathroom. So therefore, such rocks are not mukta. So therefore, there's no problem from that braisa according to the Yitzchok. He would say that if they were regular rocks, there would be a problem, but not these special rocks. Tashma. Person machzelus agav kaveres dvarim b'Shabbos. We learn in another braisa that you're allowed to spread out a mat over a beehive on Shabbos. V'chama v'pnei chama v'kshamim v'pnei kshamim. If it's during the summertime, then you're allowed. When it's sunny, then you're allowed to do it in order to protect the beehive and the bees from the sun, from the heat. V'kshamim, and if it's during the rainy times, v'pnei kshamim, you're allowed to do that just to protect them from the rain. Over vajla is skaven lotzud, as long as you don't intend to trap the bee inside the hive. So the point is now the hive itself is mukta and the bees are mukta. So according to the Yitzchok, how would you be allowed to use a mat to cover it? The answer is hosam nami geikad dvash. The answer is we're talking about that there's honey in the hive. So therefore you're protecting the honey. The honey is not mukta. Now, it is actually true. Tosfos elsewhere points out the Gemara tells us you're not allowed to take honey out of a hive on Shabbos. You haroida dvach for Shabbos, a person who scrapes out the honey from the hive. So the Rebbe Eliezer holds is actually chayav d'oraisa. The Chum say it's only also d'rabbanan, but whatever. It's also how does that help us over here? The answer is you might have so much honey in there that's overflowing the honeycombs, and there's no roida involved. There's no scraping it off. All you have to do is just pick it up. Off what's overflowing over the honeycombs. So Amalei Rav Ukva Mimeshan Rav Ashi, but Rav Ukva from Mishan Rameshan, whatever asked Rav Ashi, Hatenach Bimosach Chama De'ikad Vash. Well, that explains things during the summertime because that's when you have honey in the hive. Bimosach Shamin Ma'ikal Meimer. What about during the wintertime? The bees are not collecting nectar and making honey during that time. So during that time of year, you don't have extra honey in the hive. So why would you be allowed to cover the beehive? So according to the Ula, no problem. You're allowed to take the machzelas and cover the beehive, even though the beehive is mukta because the machzelas is not. But according to the Yitzchak, that you're only allowed to move a keli only for the sake of another keli, which is not mukta. During the winter time, there's no honey in the hive, no extra honey in the hive. So how are you allowed to cover the beehive then? And the answer is lo nitzuchal lo oisim shtei chalas. The answer is sure, but the chiddush is even because you have those two honeycombs, you have to have the bees have to have something to live off of during the winter. So usually, even when you take out all the honey from the beehive, you leave behind two honeycombs for the bees to be able to live off the honey stored in those until the spring when the flowers start blossoming again. So therefore, to those two chalas, then you're those two chalas you might want to take. The problem is Osen Shtei Chalas Mukta saying, what do you mean? Those themselves are Mukta. You set them aside for the bees. The answer is Hochav Maiskin and Shechoshav Aleihem. The answer is no. What you're talking about that before Shabbos or before Yom Tov, you already thought, you know what? Never mind that. I want to take those two Chalas for myself. As far as the bees, I don't care. Let them swarm and go someplace else. So therefore, so that's so the honey in those two. So it's true. You're not going to have other honey in the hive that time of year, but you have those two challahs. Well, then the Gemara says, "Avol lechoshev aleihem mai osir." So what are you telling me then? That if you didn't, that according to, so in order to make this work, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, you're going to have to say that if you didn't have in mind about those two challahs, they are going to be mukta, and therefore the heter to cover the hive during the in the rain would not work. Well, if you're going to make that distinction, ad tonyu avadshle skaven lotzer, then why? So my osir. So what are you saying in that case would be osir? Then in that case, ad tonyu avadshle skaven lotzer, instead of going into another detail and mentioning that it makes a difference whether he intends to trap the bees inside or not, liflig v'lisnei b'dida. Let the Mishnah, according to the Yitzchak, the Braisa should be making a distinction even within the covering itself. Even if you're not going to, even if you're not trapping the bees, you have a different issue. The Braisa should say, "Vamed v'ram amurim shachoshev aleh." And when are you allowed to cover it during the winter time? When you thought about it, when you planned before Shabbos or before Yom Tov to take the two honeycombs with the honey, avolei choshev aleihem also. But if you didn't think about them, then it would be also. Why write it? Why compose the Braisa in a way that implies that you're always allowed to cover the beehive during the winter, and say the only distinction is whether you, if you plan to trap the bees, then you're not allowed to on the grounds of the Malacha of Tzedek. The answer is Hachikoma. What the Braisa means is Afa Pisha Choshev Aleihem. Even if you thought that you planned to take those honeycombs, you have another. So now that takes care of the problem of Mukta, but you have another consideration of Avadshalei Skaven Lotzer. You also have to have in mind that you're not planning to trap the bees. So in other words, so the Braisa is in fact implying that there are two potential issues over here. There can be a problem of Mukta, according to the Yitzchak, and there can be a problem of Tzeda, and in order to be able to do it, you're going to have both. You have to take care of the problem of Mukta, which you accomplish, but during the summertime, there's no problem, there's plenty of honey. During the wintertime, you have to accomplish that by having in mind to take the two honeycombs, and in addition, you also have to make sure that you're not being over on Tzeda. Okay. So the Gemara says, now, another way of explaining the Braisa, after all, could have been, we didn't have to explain the Braisa this way that we're talking about, where we do accept that there's the concept of Mukta, and then we have to deal with how we get around it. We could have much more easily said that the Braisa goes like Reb Shimon, who doesn't hold of a very broad concept of Mukta. The fact that we didn't do that implies that we wanted to make the Braisa work like Reb Yehuda, who holds of the broader concept of Mukta. Well then, but my ukim, remember that the machlokas of Rabbi Yitzchak is not directly related to the machlokas of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Remember, Rabbi Yitzchak is saying that once you have something that's mukta, then you can only move a keli, then you can't move a keli in order to protect that. But we first have to define what's mukta. According to Rabbi Yehuda, there's a much broader definition than Rabbi Shimon. So we could have easily said that there's no problem mukta with the honey here at all. Just because it's reserved for the bees doesn't mean you couldn't have potentially used it yourself. And then we would have said, then Rabbi Yitzchak would have no problem with this braisa either, because then there's no issue of mukta. The fact that we didn't do that implies that we want to make the braisa work according to Rabbi Yehuda's definition of mukta. Well, then the question is, aim a sefer. But so So what do you explain? The Braisa goes like Rabbi Yehuda, who holds of the concept of Mukta. Ema Sefer, well then let's look at the Sefer. Over Vajla Yiskaven Lotzud, we said it's okay as long as he doesn't intend to trap the bees. Well, I saw in Lotto Shimon, Dama Davashani Miskaven Mutter. That part goes according to Rabbi Shimon, that it's Davashani Miskaven and therefore it's going to be Mutter. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, it doesn't matter what your Kavana was, if you ended up trapping them, then you're still also. The Gemara says, what do you mean? Tispera did of Shimon. What do you mean? How are you thinking any way that you could make the Braisa could potentially be like Rav Shimon? Even Rav Shimon agrees by Psik Resha. If you're covering the beehive, inevitably the bees are going to be trapped in there. Even Rav Yehuda is not, even Rav Shimon is not going to allow that. So it's not a question of, what do you mean, eventually scaven? Even if he doesn't have in mind to trap them, that's exactly what he's accomplishing. He is trapping them. Even Rav Shimon is not going to allow such a thing. So therefore, la'olam kula Rav Yehuda. So actually, we can answer that the whole braisa goes according to Rav Yehuda. So that explains why the honey in there is mukta, unless he had it in mind. What about the davar shenim scaven part? the case we'd be talking about where the beehive has openings on the sides. So now, normally what it is, you know, in other words, you can have a beehive which is closed in from the sides. The only opening is on the top. And when you put a machzelis, when you put a mat on top of it, then that's it. The bees are trapped inside. But now, what if you have a beehive that's constructed that it has holes in the sides? Well, even if you cover the top, the bees can still get in and out through those holes in the sides. So when we say v'loy tamer l'Rabbi Yehuda uvad shalei skaven lotzud, so don't say that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the key thing is whether you have in mind to trap or not, because here it's not a matter of having in mind. It's rather ella, rather the correct way of saying it is ema. Rather, you should correct the braisa and say uvad shalei yasena mitzuda, as long as you don't make the beehive into a trap. Namely, as long as you don't cover the beehive completely by closing up the windows as well. If you did that, then you would be doing the malacha of tzedah. But like this, if you only cover up the top and it has holes on the sides, then there's no issue. Well, then the question is pshita. Obviously, then the braisa doesn't need to tell us that if you close up the top and you close up the holes in the side, that then you've accomplished the malacha of tzedah. So then, if you say that it's a matter of kavana, then fine, you can talk according to the Shimon or not. But if now we're saying it's according to the Yehuda, who doesn't care about kavana, because according to him, dava shem eskaven is usur, and the only way that it works is the only way that's allowed is if there's holes in the sides. And we're saying if you block the holes, then shalo yasena mitzuda, as long as you don't make it into a trap by closing up the holes, then because if you did, it would be usur. Well, pshita, obviously that would be usur. the answer is ma'uda tema the minay. Tosfos actually says, okay. The fact is, you have the same problem though. That's the same problem as before. Even fine, we might say that according Rashi learns that if you covered up the windows, Reb Shimon would allow it. But the question is why? Again, it's psikresha. So Tosfos actually says that we can be talking about, Reb Shimon might understand that the case in the Braisa is where you have little tiny holes here and there by the sides of the hive. So they're too small for you to notice, but the bees can conceivably get in and out through them. So now Reb Shimon is going to say it's not psikresha. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say that because he doesn't care about Dava Shana Miskaven, he says Dava Shana Miskaven is usur, you need the holes to be big enough for you to notice and that the bees should be able to see them, obviously, not that they have to finagle around over there inside the kaveras and chance upon a tiny little hole. Anyway, so the one asked Pshita. Obviously, if you close up the big holes in the side, then you're making it into a mitsuda, you're making it into a trap, and it's going to be also, what's the chiddush? The answer is mau detema. Without the braisa telling us, you would have thought the minay nitzoid osir, maybe the din of tzedah only applies to the type of creatures that are regularly trapped, for example, chayas and oifas. Maybe it would be allowed with the kind of creatures that are not normally trapped. And we're assuming, for example, that means bees. Kamash Malan, therefore, the Braisa wants us to know that even by bees, the Malacha of Tzedah applies. There is, by the way, a good deal of discussion about this because the Beis Yosef talks about this, and the Beis Yosef seems to say that bees are not a creature, or are not the type of creature that's usually trapped. And then that doesn't seem to fit with our Gemara. So he may have understood that, or the other way around. He says that bees are the minay nitzud. So maybe. he says that bees are minay nitzud. So how does that fit with our Gemara? So one possibility, I think the Tzlach says that the Beis Yosef might understand that the our Gemara is telling us exactly that, that you would do with the bees are the minay nitzud. Therefore, that is why you have a problem. But even shaloi b'mina nitzud, you would also have a problem with it. So even if it wasn't bees, even if it was some other kind of insect, then you'd still have a problem, at least dirabanan.
Well, bees certainly are something that's kosher because you want their honey.
You want their honey, right? But still, we find, for example, in Bava Basra, where a person doesn't really fully have ownership of bees, and therefore, right. if a swarm of bees goes from one place to another, then it's not really fully considered his daraisa, only dirabanan, yeah. Okay. Rav Ashi says you don't really need all of that we said before, that we were asking about isn't the hive muktzah during the winter because there's no honey that people are going to eat. All you have is the shtei chalas. Rav Ashi says your premise is wrong. We're not necessarily talking about the actual summertime versus the actual wintertime. Mi katani bi moisa chamu bi moisa gshamim. Did the Braisi use the expression during the summertime or during the wintertime? No. The expression was in the heat of the sun, you're allowed to cover it because of the sun. In the cold of the rain, you're allowed to cover it because of the rain. In other words, we're not talking about the summer and the winter, respectively, necessarily. But Yom Nisan or Yom Tishrei, we could easily be talking about during Nisan and Tishrei time, where you have all of them. The Ikka Cham of Ikka Shamim, you have sunny days, you have rainy days, and the Ikka Dvash. Nisan and Tishrei time, there's plenty of honey in the hive. So therefore, even according to, so therefore, there's nothing to talk about Muktzah, because there's plenty of honey in the hive that you could conceivably use on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So therefore, there's no issue of Muktzah. The only question is Tzedah. So then, fine, we have what we said before about not closing up the windows and about Minoy Nitzot and so forth. Yeah. Okay. So the bottom line is that we don't have anything in any of these Mishnayos or Braisos clearly one way or the other, according to Ula or according to Rabbi Yitzchak, whether you're allowed to move a keli for the sake of something else that's muktzah. The halacha in the end is like Ula that you're allowed to. There are other Gemaras that tell us that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yitzchak in that regard.
So we're going from pani to ref shalri,
yeah? Okay, so the Mishnah had said, v'noistin kli tachza delaf b'shabbos. You're allowed to put a keli under a drip, under a leak from the roof on Shabbos. Now, we said on Amud Aleph, again, that the water has to be clear. Again, is that lahalacha? According to the Rambam, yes. According to the Torah, not. So, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, im nismalei akli, if the keli gets filled up, the leak has been going on long enough, shofich, then you're allowed to pour it out, outdoors, v'shoine, and put the keli back. The ein nimna, you don't have to hold back. You don't have to worry that at some point you're going to be over on the din of mukta. You're allowed to do it as many times as necessary. The Gemara tells a case: Be'rechaya da Abaya dolu, the place where Abaya had his millstones, there was a leak in the roof over there. Now the problem is the millstones are made are held together with mortar, so the mortar would dissolve from the rain. He didn't have enough now. So why didn't he bring Kalim? Why didn't he bring Kalim to catch the delach? So Rashi explains he didn't have enough. So he needs to do something else in order to save his rechayim. Also, the kamei de Rabba. So he came to Rabba to ask what to do. Amalei. So Rabba tells him, Zil aile lepuryach lahasam. Take your bed. Bring it into that building where you have your rechayim. Now the rechayim, now the millstones that are getting ruined by the rain will be like a graf shari. It's disgusting. A person doesn't want to have something like that in front of his bed. And then then you'll be allowed to take it outside, as we just said, for example, about the water from the delaf that your Tosfos says that you're allowed to take it out because it's a graf shari. And the same thing the Gemara is going to mention soon, that you're allowed to carry out a graf shari means a bucket that you use for excrement. We're going to talk about graf shari and obit shomei raglaim, which means a bucket for urine. Either of those, you're allowed to remove them because they're disgusting to have around. So the same way, Rabba tells Abaya, once you bring your bed in there, then it becomes your bedroom. Nobody wants a rechayim in their bedroom, therefore you're going to be allowed to remove it.
But it's interesting how the negovar that's not spoken about. Before.
So the Gemara doesn't talk about negovar, but we had
but the leaky roof was spoken about.
The leaky roof we have right here. Again, the Gemara had said that one possibility is that we're talking about that the water has to be clear, not in order to remove it, but in order to put the keli there. Because the question was putting the keli there in the first place. The problem is actually twofold. First of all, according to Yitzchak specifically, you can only move a keli for the sake of something that's not muktzah. So therefore, according to him, the water has to be clear. The other consideration you have to take into consideration is called mevato kli mehichonai. If you take a keli and put it someplace where it's going to catch something that's muktzah, now it's like you're breaking that keli, or like you're attaching it to the ground because you can't move it the rest of Shabbos. So therefore, that would be a different issue. That is the reason why the Rambam says that even the halacha, the water has to be clear, even though we don't hold like Rabbi Yitzchak, but still you have a problem of mevato kli mehichonai, whereas the Torah doesn't hold that way. Anyway. So back to the story of Abaya's millstone. Yosef Abaye, but Kakashalei. So Abaye was sitting and wondering about this. How could Rabba tell me that I'm allowed to do that, to move my bed in there? Or you're allowed to create a graf shore'il hatchila, to cause, to begin with, that something should be near stick, so that you'll have a heter to take it out. Which we actually had before. We had on Daf Chof Aleph, we talked about the case where if you invite a goy to your house and you're giving him wine to drink, where now the leftover wine in the cup is yain nesach or stam yenim, whatever, are you allowed to do that? Are you allowed to then take the cup and wash it out because you have the problem? It's back to the problem of graf shore'i. It's disgusting to leave it like that on Yom Tov or on Shabbos, but on the other hand, are you not allowed to make a graf shore'i hatchila? So Abaye was wondering the same thing. Adahochi, while he was thinking about it, nafal beirechaya davaya, the place where the millstones was fell down, because eventually it got wet enough that the mortar dissolved and fell apart.
By a river.
It doesn't say. Omar, so Abaye said to himself, Tasili, I deserve for this to happen to me, the Avri Adamar, because I went against what my Rebbe says. In other words, once my Rebbe told me that I'm allowed to, I shouldn't have been so frum and to think, but maybe he's wrong and maybe I need to be machmir. So in fact, so Tosva says it's true that Enos and Graf Shabbat Hatchila. Rabbi would say maybe over here it's allowed again because of Hefsid, or because maybe it's or because over here it's not really making a Graf Shabbat Hatchila. You already have the Graf Shabbat in a sense because the rain is leaking in, as opposed to there when you serve the goy the cup of wine, there was no Graf Shabbat until you served them the wine. Right. Whereas over here there already is a leak. Amar Shmuel, so in this connection, Shmuel says,
Graf Shore'iv
Ovet Shomeme Raglayim, so a Graf Shore'iv, which is a pail or a bucket that's used for re'i, for excrement, and Ovet Shomeme Raglayim, and a bucket used for urine. Rashi explains a graf and an ovet are essentially the same thing. We just call it a graf when it's used for excrement, and we call it an ovet when it's used for urine. Anyway, Mutter Leitzim Lashba, you're allowed to take them out to the trash to spill them out. Now, when you want to put it back in the room, now that, so to take it out, you're allowed to because of graf shore'i and because of covered abrius, because it's not covered to keep that in the house the rest of Yom Tov or the rest of Shabbos. But when you bring it back, that you want to bring it back to be able to use it later, there's no covered abrius involved. Therefore, what you have to do is noisin by mayim machziri. You have to put some water in there, and then you're going to be allowed to carry it. Now, normally, that kind of thing wouldn't be allowed either, just because you have a keli that's mukta. You can't put something that's not mukta in it and carry it. But here, the Chachamim made an exception for that because you do need it. You are going to need it throughout Shabbos. But at least you have to put in some water. Now, the Chachamim thought, based on what Shmuel is saying, what is it? You're not allowed to carry out the re'i, the excrement by itself. If it's in the keli, then fine. You're allowed to carry the keli, and with it goes the re'i. So does that mean if you have something that's disgusting by itself, not inside a keli, maybe you wouldn't be allowed to move it? But the Gemara says, no, Toshma, Dahu Achbarta, there was a mouse, the Ishtakach Be'ispamati de Rav Ashi, that was found in the spice storage area of Rav Ashi. The Musaf Oruch, by the way, you have the Oruch from Rav Nosson, Bala Oruch, then you have a few hundred years later, there was a Talmid Chacham named Rav Binyamin Musafia, who was an expert, among other things, in Greek and Latin, and he wrote more notes on the Oruch, pointing out where some words come from in those languages. He says the word spermaki is related to the word pharmacy in English. Because pharmacy literally means a place where you store spices or medicines or whatever. Anyway, so there was a mouse once found in the Ispamathy, in the spice or medicine storage area of Rav Ashi, on Yom Tov, Omar Lahu Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi told them, Nachta b'tzitzisa v'apkua, pick it up by the tail and carry it out. So we see that even though it's not in a keli, but because it itself is something disgusting to have around, then you're allowed to pick it up and carry it out. So we see that the re'i doesn't have to be in a keli in order to be mutter to carry it.
Just
not tied to
5 minutes
of Okay. Mishnah says, anything where midrabanan, you're not allowed to do something because shvus or shvois, the Chachamim tell us stop and don't do this at midrabanan, or mishum reshus, or even where there's a reshus involved, shvus would imply there's no mitzvah in it at all. It's strictly something optional that you want to do. Mishum reshus. That was Musaf Aruch. So Mishum reshus, or even when you have something which is also where there's a little bit of a mitzvah involved, but not a full-fledged mitzvah, or mishum mitzvah, or even where there's a full-fledged mitzvah involved, in all, where the Chachamim asked it, the Shabbos, chayav and all of the yomtiv. So those things also, a person is chayav, meaning not to, he's not allowed to do it on yomtiv either. You shouldn't think that in those things, yomtiv is more lenient than Shabbos. The Elohim mishum shavus. So the following things are examples of things that are also mishum shavus. Loy olin be'ilan on yomtiv on Shabbos, and we're saying on yomtiv as well. You're not allowed to climb up a tree, and we're going to explain with each one in the Gemara why not. You're not allowed to ride on an animal. You're not allowed to swim. You're not allowed to clap your hands together. You're not allowed to clap your hands on your thighs. Or dance. Now here we had before on Daf Lamed, we had a Tosfos that says that nowadays this may not apply because the Gemara is going to say it's in order that you don't fix clay shear, and we don't have the expertise for that. We talked about also previously on Daf Lamed. So it was over Yom Tov actually about the Heterim that we have nowadays to do that. It was actually the Daf on Simchas Torah, but on Yisrochag we talked about.
It was on
Simchas Torah that we danced and sang. Yeah. So what it is Rabbi Hai Goyim said you're allowed to on Simchas Torah because of the covered of the Torah, the Beis Yosef brings it, and then based on that, the Minchas Alazar says so. If a person feels that kind of Simcha during the rest of the year, then he can do it. Then he can do it during the rest of the year as well. Okay.
What if you don't feel it? You're just going around the circle.
If you don't feel it, then I don't know. The Elohein Meshum Rishus, the following things you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov, which involve Rishus, they're not a full-fledged mitzvah, but there's a shtickle mitzvah involved. Loy Donin, you're not allowed to judge a Din Torah on Shabbos or Yom Tov. V'loy Mekadshin, by the way, as far as this Loy Donin, Rav Shira Goin brings an interesting thing, which is brought Lahalacha. Part of this Loy Donin is what if Beis Din has a person they need to put in jail because he's not listening to them or he's not doing whatever. They're not allowed to put him in jail on Shabbos. And if that means that he runs away over Shabbos, okay, that's not their problem.
That would mean that he violated whatever they tell him not to violate on
right.
the Shabbos.
Well, let's say whatever.
Capture him on right. the Shabbos.
Yeah.
So if you're
going to
do something wrong, do it on the Shabbos.
Okay. V'loy mekadshin. You're not allowed to be mekadesh a woman on Shabbos. V'loy chiltin. You're not allowed to do chalitza. V'loy miyadmin. And you're not allowed to do yibum on Shabbos. And we'll see in the Gemara for each one of them the reason why. There is actually an interesting case that happened in the time of the Ramah where a kiddushin took place on Shabbos. What it was, the Ramah was the Rav of Krakow, we know. In his time, there was a popular minhag to do weddings on Friday. The pashtus, I guess, a reason was because this way the people were poor. This way the Shabbos sort of could do double duty as a wedding sort of. Whatever. It happened one time in the Ramah's times in Krakow where there was a Yisoma who was getting married. And there was a problem, though the problem developed as far as the Nadin, and there ended up being a whole argument, and things are getting delayed further and further, and it's getting closer and closer to Shabbos, and they still can't resolve things, and this poor girl is completely humiliated. So eventually they finally managed to resolve it. It was already an hour and a half or 2 hours after Shabbos had begun. The Ramah said, go ahead with the Kiddushin and the Chuppah and everything. And they did. And after Shabbos, the Ramah sat down and wrote a long tshuva justifying what he had done. Even though it says in the Mishnah over here in Mekadshin, he brought various reasons up Halacha that in this case it would be mutter. Nevertheless, though, after that they made a takana in Krakow from then on not to hold weddings on Fridays in order not to have this problem again. And it mentions that in Shulchan Aruch that it's really not a good idea to hold weddings on Fridays precisely for that reason, because if things get delayed, then you're gonna end up going into Shabbos. Okay. Well, we'll stop over here and we'll finish the Mishnah and start on the Gemara on it tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.
Have a wonderful day.